working. Ugh, these are all so hard. Wouldn't it be nice if we could just dump all of our raw hardware and hide it behind a slick interface and turn that metal into a push-button-operated data center? Yeah, it would be full of joy and joyness, and all our applications would just work, and if things got slow, we'd just slam more metal into the rack. Yeah, so awesome, dude. So awesome. Hi there, reality speaking. We aren't there yet, but maybe we're making progress. And on today's Data Not Show, we are joined by Michael Hasenblas to speak with us about Apache Mesos, a data center operating system. I am Ethan Banks, by the way, at EC Banks on Twitter. Joining me is Chris Wall. Chris, you're rubbing the sleep out of your eyes. 7 o'clock on the west coast of California. Is that about right?
Yeah, let's not rub it in, man. It's 10 a.m. your time. I'm not feeling the love this morning, but yeah, man. Data Knots is always worth waking up for. And if you're not already a subscriber, do so. And if you are, then tell 10 friends to subscribe, because we love people to listen to this podcast and we feel you get some value out of it.
And you've been sending us lots of great feedback. So yeah, exactly. Word of mouth is awesome. Rate us on iTunes too would be absolutely spectacular. And without further ado, Michael, would you introduce yourself to the Data Knots audience?
All right. Thanks a lot for having me. And my name is Michael Hasenblas. I'm a developer and cloud advocate at Mesosphere, commercial entity behind Apache Mesos. If you want to follow me on Twitter, M. Hasenblas. I'm not going to spell that out. You can figure it out. My background is more in the Hadoop and the NoSQL world. Used to work at MapR. And I'm very, very excited being able to talk with you guys about Mesos and this vision of data center operating system.
Cool. Okay. And all of you, forgive me if I say Mesos accidentally. It's Apache Mesos is correct.
That's right.
Right. Okay. Get that in my head. Let's level set here right at the beginning, Michael, and why don't you just introduce for us this concept of a data center operating system, which is what Mesos is built to be and how I understand it. What is data center operating system?
There are three terms flying around here. There is Apache Mesos, the top-level open source Apache project. Then there is Mesosphere, which is the company. And then there is the DCOS, the data center operating system. In the data center operating system, which is a distributed operating system like good old Plan 9 or whatever, just a bit cooler, right? We are using Apache Mesos as the kind of kernel. It's pretty much the same as if you look at any kind of Linux distribution, Red Hat, what have you. They're using a Linux kernel and then put a lot of stuff around that and then sell that or sell support around that. And we're doing the same here. We're rolling an Apache Mesos stack, adding all these goodies around that, you know, Marathon and Kronos and service discovery and security and whatnot. And that is the data center operating system.
Okay, so Mesos is a kernel. Now, when I think of a Linux operating system and the kernel there, I think of it as isolated to a single host, a single chunk of metal, if you will.
Yep.
There's a distinction here in that Mesos is distributed?
That is exactly right. Think of it, you have a bunch of machines, typically called a cluster or a data center, if you're very fancy. Now, what you want to do is you want to abstract all these different machines in this best pets versus cattle, right? You want to treat all of them like cattle. You want to abstract all of these machines, this cluster of machines, as one big computer. It's a bit like mainframes done right. Huh? You have that on commodity hardware, scale out, treat all of them equally, and don't really care where your container or your application, whatever is launched. Mesos and then the data center operating system by extension takes care of that. It keeps your stuff running, fails over, you don't get any pager calls at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Okay.
The elusive pager shows its ugly head again. It's like tape drives, it just won't die.
True. Yeah, so that's in a nutshell. It is all about abstracting away these nasty little beasts, making it for you as an operations folks or a developer easier to write and operate distributed applications.
Okay, so I have a question then. Is the idea then that these are container hosts being managed, or is it a hypervisor that's running virtual machines? Or
Right. I both mean the Apache Mesos project and data center operating system. We don't really care on top of what we run. Of course, bare metal, that's cool. If you do have some VM infrastructure there, I'm not going to mention any vendors now, but if you want to, sure, you can do that. You can run it on OpenStack if you like. It's not necessary. You can just run it on bare metal. That is the basic unit that we have there. So we have, obviously, for each of the individual hosts or machines, whatever you have, virtual or bare metal, you have what we call a local operating system. in the community edition we offer, so the stuff that people can just try out for free in diverse cloud environments. We have standardized on CoreOS. It makes it easy, lightweight, and Docker native. But on-prem customers just tell us, hey, you know, we have Ubuntu or we have whatever, right? CentOS or whatever, and then we make it run on that.
Okay, trying to wrap my brain around all of this. Okay. Well, this is just kind of busting some of my preconceptions about what Mesos was all about. I was thinking, okay, it's going to be bare metal. You're going to load Mesos on it. And that's like the foundation. That's the underlying OS in your data center. That's not exactly what we're dealing with here. This is actually, it almost sounds like it's plugging into existing infrastructure that you may have. Is that more accurate?
Yes. Typically, in the good old brick and mortar companies and whatnot, they have their existing clusters. They might have their web server farm or whatever. And obviously, you are already using something now, typically VMs. And then the question is, you know, how can we actually migrate over? How can we benefit from the DCOS? Typically, we just work with whatever is there, right? That's part of what we do in the product and in the service, that we make it work with whatever the customer has on-prem or in cloud. It's part of the enterprise edition.
Okay, well, we're going to get into what it looks like to deploy Mesos a little bit later in the show. But for the moment, I think maybe we should talk about some fundamental Mesos concepts. So I went up to the Apache site and I looked at some of the introductory comments about Mesos, like if you're just trying to orient yourself on what it's all about. And there's some major terminology that I saw there. You know, for example, master and a slave, there's applications or frameworks, tasks, resources, and resource offers. Could you talk us through these fundamental concepts that I think are going to be important in our conversation going forward?
Sure, pleasure. Mesos itself is what we call a two-level scheduler. And that essentially means Mesos itself, the Mesos master, which is kind of the brain of the whole thing. It keeps the overall cluster state, if you wish. It knows about the overall cluster state, so which machines are there, what resources are there. And that's essentially already these two roles, right? The master is the kind of the brain, and the slave, or we are currently in a politically correct way, changing that terminology to agent. It's not slave anymore, it's agent going 1.0. So I will use probably slave and agent interchangeably in the following. We all have to get used to that new terminology. Those are processes that sit on each of your boxes. Let's say you have 10 bare metal servers somewhere. So you would install somewhere a master process and 10 times the slaves. And the slaves or agents, they effectively report, hey, you know, I've got so and so many CPUs and that much amount of RAM and that port range and whatnot. They announce the resources. And that can, as I said, be a lot. And you can also customize that. You can say, hey, you know, here I have a box with GPU or whatever. But the default standard resources are, as I said, CPU, MEM, memory, ports, and network. That's the thing that the slaves know by default. And then the master says, oh, okay, cool. I 10 times whatever resources the slaves or agents reported to me. And that's what the master can work with, right? That's the fundamental unit the master works with. Now, what does two-level scheduling mean? Well, that's where the applications frameworks come into play. The actual scheduling decision is not done by Mesos Master. That is done in the frameworks. So a framework is something like Marathon or Kronos or Spark or Elasticsearch or what have you. Those guys, they actually encode how they want to treat their tasks and schedule their jobs or whatever the terminology in the respective framework is. And how do they do that? Well, they communicate with the master, right? And in a sense, that this master-slave or master-agent setup that you see in Mesos Core, very much the same in the framework. So you have the framework scheduler that essentially implements the scheduling algorithm or scheduling logic. And then you have on each of the machines under the control of the slave or agent, you have something what we call an executor. And executor tasks, that's very often, or many frameworks just use that like interchangeably. They have one task per executor. So that let's probably not go too deep into executor. Let's just think the tasks, those are the units of work that run on a certain slave or within a certain slave and are controlled by the framework scheduler. Again, framework consists of two parts, the scheduler, which implements the scheduling logic, and the executor slash task on the slaves that actually carry out the work.
Kind of like a control plane and data plane in the network world. You know,
Where
am I going to do it and what am I going to do?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. And there's one bit missing, what I didn't say yet. How does the framework carry out the work? Well, that's where the two-level scheduling really, now it should make sense in a moment. it gets resource offers from the master. So the master knows from the slaves, I've got, 10 times that and that and that, and says, hey, framework one, Marathon, for example, I've got these resources. Would you like to do something with it? And Marathon says, oh, yeah, actually, there was a user saying, I should totally run this Ruby script here. And the user said, I need, 1 gig of RAM or whatever, and this port range and so many CPU shares or whatever. And looks like the resource offer that you give me, framework says that, looks like that is a match. I can execute that. So framework says, okay, let's execute that. So the master offers resources to the framework scheduler. And the framework scheduler can then decide, yeah, I'm going to do something with it because a user asked the framework to do something. Or it says, nah, that's not the right thing. I need more RAM or whatever. And then rejects that offer and waits its turn until the master comes back and says, dear framework one, I have another resource offer for you. Make sense?
I think so. So let me back up a little bit and ask some clarifying questions. One would be, you're not taking a job and distributing a job across multiple nodes, as in a typical distributed computing sort of a problem. You're taking a job that needs to be run and putting it somewhere out in on some host that's a participant in Mesos that has the resources to run this particular job?
Yes and no, because it very much depends on the framework. So like, for example, Marathon, that's a bit like init. Whenever you have something like, a web server, whatever, you just want to run all the time. In the Marathon, you have that abstraction of applications and groups. So you would say one application would, for example, be Nginx. You tell Marathon, the framework, hey, I want to have 3 instances of that. I want to have 3 copies of that running. So Marathon says, okay, I have the specification. I know what you need in terms of CPU and RAM and whatnot. By the way, I really, because I'm a cool kid, I'm obviously not running Nginx out of the box, but I'm running a Docker image of Nginx. And the user said 3 copies of that, right? So what the framework really does is it needs to get enough resource offers from the master to actually launch 3 copies of that. And if these 3 copies then end up on one machine or on 3 different ones or on 2, that depends on other things. Because you can, for example, in Marathon say, hey, I totally want these 3 copies of Nginx having run on the very same machine, or put them in different racks or whatever. So if you don't say anything, then it's up to Mesos to decide where to. But you can force it. You can put constraints on it. You can say only on machines that are painted blue, or only on machines that feel good today or whatever. So you can attach arbitrary constraints there, and then Mesos will make it work. We'll launch it where you told it to launch it.
But again, you'd never take a single job and run that across multiple Mesos hosts. And by single, I mean, you've only got one copy of a particular application. It's one executable task, one thing. It's going to land on one host.
Yep, that's right.
Okay.
So that's really the metric, yeah.
So then in that context, what sort of applications can I run on Mesos?
Really everything. We started off with the Mesos containerizer that's essentially LXE, and then just allowing you to run literally anything. So anything that you can run on your local favorite Linux distribution, where you just type in, Bash script or JVM-based application or whatever you have, can run. More than a year ago, we started with the Docker support, and now we can also run any kind of Docker image or Docker container done when it's running. So there's no limitation per se.
So when can I build the Windows-based Mesosphere cluster? It's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but...
It's actually not that much tongue-in-cheek, because we recently announced a rather big strategic partnership with Microsoft, and we're, in fact, working on it. So Microsoft has essentially standardized on the DCOS source part, making it as the basis of their Azure Container Service. Part of that, and we demonstrated it earlier this year in Seattle at the MesosCon, the Windows container. So we're working in that space with Microsoft, and I cannot really commit to any concrete timelines or whatever when that will be available, but we're working on it.
Sure. No, that's just interesting to hear. I am almost surprised, but high fives to Microsoft and the Mesosphere team.
Thank you. I will extend that to my colleagues.
Well, Chris, I got to say that first impressions of Apache Mesos is not what I thought it was exactly. It's kind of a different animal. And just to articulate what I thought I was getting and what it actually is, I thought I was getting something that you install bare metal and it just magically presents blocks of resources out to a central host. and you put a job out there, and it's kind of that, but it kind of isn't. What I learned here from Michael is that Mesos is more about using resources to run jobs. You're not distributing a single job across multiple Mesos hosts. And that was the big misconception I had. It was kind of like, you could take any app and turn it into a distributed computing app. No, not exactly. Which, now that I'm thinking about it, makes sense. Applications need to be designed for that. And you'd be asking a lot of Mesos to track all that stuff for you.
I agree. Yeah, I had a different thought in mind as to what it was. I put my hands just a little bit on it. I've got it installed on just one node in the lab to touch and play with, but definitely learning a lot from this particular show. I had similar takeaways as you. The one thing that I felt was most interesting so far was the idea of a resource offer. In the vSphere world, it feels like the scheduler is always keeping real-time tabs on everything, and it's forcing workloads into a node, you know, a hypervisor. Here it felt kind of like the reverse, almost like going to like a kayak website to book travel. It's like, make me an offer and I'll pick the one I like the most or the one that meets my needs. So that was interesting to me. It tickled my brain a little bit. So I got to say, learning about Mesosphere so far is mind-blowing. I think this is exciting tech. It reminds me of the proper or the intended use of VMware's resource pools, but way sexier. So let's go into the world of brownfield, which is the idea that you already have a data center and you want to add Mesosphere to it. Let's talk about an existing environment that does well with Mesosphere. What does that look like, Michael?
Let's maybe step back a bit so that people understand how they can actually start. If someone says, okay, I totally want to now install Mesos, right? So you can, obviously, because it is an Apache project, you can just build it from source. You go there and clone it from GitHub and just build it yourself. Many people use packages that we have pre-compiled, so you can, you know, just download all the bits and pieces, like, you know, Mesos itself, Marathon and Kronos, what have you.
And by we, you mean Mesosphere?
Mesosphere, yes.
Okay.
Or, so that's the kind of like the second level, if you wish, and the third level would be to use the DCOS, where we have essentially not only made all the builds and whatnot, but really also the wiring and you know, have an opinionated way of connecting all these different components, like where we run Marathon and Zookeeper and how and the networking and everything figured out. So that's the kind of like, as a black box, right? You just use this, the whole thing. So that these are the three basic options. People who start quite often start with doing the convenient stuff, just using our packages. And if you want to learn about it, you probably want to have a look at the source code, I guess. That's what makes sense. In terms of system requirements, it's pretty straightforward. So 64-bit Linux that works also under macOS at the current point in time. And then it's really just, you know, whatever you prefer, Ubuntu or CentOS, whatever. So very straightforward to install that. But don't forget that no one is using Mesos on its own. It's like, no one is using the Linux kernel on its own other than your Linux kernel developer, but you know,
right.
Normal people use some kind of Linux distribution in order to carry out their work. And in that sense, if you just install Mesos, you can't really do a lot, right? It doesn't do a lot on its own. So you want to pick whatever kind of framework. So if you have long-running tasks, Marathon, if you have batch stuff, Kronos, which is essentially just, you know, distributed cron, you might want to do some fancy big data stuff, then you might go for Spark and store your data in Cassandra and index it with Elasticsearch. So you essentially have to have some application, some use case in mind, and then select the right frameworks for that. In very, but extremely seldomly, like maybe 10% of the cases, you might want to end up writing your own framework, actually implementing such a scheduler, and even less often a custom executor. But essentially, you know, most of the folks out there just use the vanilla Marathon, Kronos, what have you, frameworks rather than writing their own. It's possible. We support that. I mean, again, Mesosphere. We have an API there, SDK, and then documentation. But as I said, usually you would just use an existing framework rather than writing your own. Because it is a distributed system, it can be quite a pain in the back to write.
Yeah, I imagine not a lot of folks have that kind of talent in their barnyard. You know,
that seems
like a non-trivial effort. You know,
exactly. The good thing is, it is extensible. You can do it, but yeah, as you say, it's not that you have that talent very often around.
So I've got Mesos installed. I've chosen a framework for my environment. What are the sort of resources that have been abstracted by Mesos? For example, I think we mentioned some of these a little bit earlier, but I wanted to dive in a little more detail. You know, compute, storage, and networking particularly. Can you explain what exactly is getting abstracted there?
Interestingly, the innovation back then, when, you know, around 2009, when Ben Hindman, our chief architect and you know, the essentially inventor of Mesos, if you wish, started his PhD or carried out his PhD, the original contribution, besides what Mesos does, Mesos slave and master and frameworks and so on, is an algorithm called DRF, standing for dominant resource fairness. And that means Mesos is able to provide resource fairness throughout different resources. So it's not just looking at CPU share or only RAM. It takes all these different resource types into account. As I said early on, there are four what we would call standard resources that Mesos knows about, and you can define your own. That is CPU, memory, disk, and ports. Regarding CPUs, it's essentially, unless you know, disabled that in your BIOS, the overall count of hyperthreads. And again, you can always configure if you set up, you know, if you configure the slave, you can always say, don't announce everything, right? I might want to have something else for outside of Mesos, but you know, if you don't, then it reports everything. So at the end of the day, whatever framework is on top using that can then use this base abstraction of the CPU shares on a certain box. Main memory, not much to say about that. It's just if you don't have enough, then the Mesos will kill the framework. So you probably want not over provision, but want to make sure that your application or your task gets by with the memory allocated. Disk is, so you have to explicitly enable the enforcement of the disk quota, and people typically, so it's essentially just the scratch space you have there, specified in megabytes. So Mesos essentially creates a sandbox. So whenever it launches a task, it creates a sandbox, and that's just a fancy word for a subdirectory, right? So there's, I would need to look it up what the exact location is, but it's just a directory where all the, you know, standard out and the standard error is written to, and that's the sandbox.
And it could be local or it could be remote. It doesn't matter. It just depends on where the mount point is on that local system.
That is local to the slave. So each of the slaves, you know, and you have one slave per machine, has such a directory for each of the tasks of each of the frameworks running. And you can garbage collect that. But as I said, the disk typically, I mean, yeah, you might have an issue if, you know, logging and so on. But typically that's fine. You don't have a lot there.
You could tell the application to log elsewhere, right? You know, it doesn't need to log specifically to that slave partition on the node, right?
So yeah, let me maybe just finish up the resources. I'll come back to persistence discussion. That's an interesting one. But it's a bit deeper. So the last of the four standard resources are ports. So you essentially define a port range. Like, okay, here, Mesos, you can have, I think, default is 31,000 to 32,000. And that's the port range that's managed by Mesos then. And again, that's something that you configure per slave. So you can obviously configure that differently for each of the slaves. And then if you launch, for example, an application in Marathon, then, you know, Marathon through Mesos will assign a random port unless you force it to be on a specific port. You can run into problems there because if that port already is taken, then...
If I am on that local host and I'm looking at processes running, I'm going to see a Mesos process running and anything sent to that Mesos instance, if you will, to be executed is going to happen inside of that instance. So I'm not going to see some other job running that got assigned to my host. I'm just going to see Mesos consuming resources on my local host?
In essence, yes. The thing is, it depends to a certain degree on how you're executing it. Are you using the Mesos containerizer, kind of the original one we started off with, or the Docker containerizer? And the Docker containerizer currently is really just essentially a wrapper around the Docker, the local Docker daemon, the API. It's you know, just passing on.
Meaning if a job comes in, it could get kicked off as a Docker container instance, not...
Exactly. Yeah, okay. So it depends on, you know, if you're launching a Docker image in Marathon, then obviously the Docker containerizer will be used, and then you're just playing by the Docker rules. And if you just, you know, launch a bash script or whatever, then you default to Mesos containerizer. And then, you know, you have the C group and the whole, just what C groups do. It's just plain C groups. Nothing too fancy there. Okay, does that answer your question?
I believe so. Yeah. Now, one more question about port range. I was expecting you to talk about networking and NICs and these kind of things, and you got into ports. So what sort of ports are we talking about again?
The normal ports, you know, like you have an IP
address. That's like TCP ports, right?
Yeah. Sorry. Yes.
Okay. Just normal socket listeners and so on. Yeah. Got it.
I'm actually not aware of any other ports.
Yeah, well, when you say ports to a network guy, the first thing he thinks of is a switch port, some physical thing sitting on a switch and a rack.
No, I'm going,
does he mean the port on the NIC? Where is he going with this? Oh, okay. We're at a higher level in the stack here. Never mind. I made it harder than it
silo
is.
Busting. Love it.
Nice.
Is Mesosphere ever concerned with the quantity and speed of the network interfaces on that particular host, or is it irrelevant?
So when you say Mesosphere, you probably mean Apache Mesos?
Yeah. Sorry. Like when I schedule a task, you know, is that something that I'm looking for, or is it just port ranges for TCP?
The basic answer is you actually don't care. You just say I need for let's take the case of a Docker container. I need to port 80 within the container exposed to the world because it needs to be routable and then visible to the world. And that's essentially it. That's all that happens there. And again, you can have either a static mapping. You say, I actually totally need to also map that to port 80 on the host. You might be, you know, lucky or happy or not. Or the default would be to say, okay, dear Mesos, just assign me one random port out of your port range. The other answer to that is, for example, and that's framework specific again, in Marathon, you can, through constraints, force the execution of a task on a certain type of host or whatever. A type of machine. And with that, you could essentially say, hey, this one needs to run on something with, I don't know, 10 GE or whatever, like being very specific about where exactly you want to place that.
Got it. I'm just thinking, in some cases, that may be a constraint, you know, the amount of available bandwidth, the you know, the latency that's provided by the link, et cetera, beyond just a simple port range.
And as I said, you can, in addition to these four standard resources, you can define your own. You can, you know, come up with whatever crazy shit you like. You know, you can say, here are GPUs or here are whatever. In the same way as the default resources are announced by the slave will then say, okay, here I have a machine with two GPUs of that and that type. And again, that can then be used by, you know, the frameworks to decide, you know, the placement or whatever.
Got it, because it remains extensible to meet the needs of your use case. It's not defined in stone.
And okay, just, you know, through command line options, say, when you start the slave, this is, you know, my resources that I have there, in addition to the standard ones, yeah. Okay, coming back to this persistency story thing. So the reason why I kind of like backed off or said, like, okay, this is a longer story, is Mesos up to 0.23, so we are now cutting 0.25, most people probably using 22, 23, whatever. So up to 0.23, it did not really have a very strong story around persistency. What do I mean by that? Essentially, it means any kind of stateless stuff, that's just perfect. Whenever you have a state, so let's say you have MySQL, right? And the MySQL process or whatever dies and Mesos says, oh, I really have to, you know, reschedule that on this other machine out there in the cluster. What happens with your data, right? So you somehow need to make sure that data is kept together with the container that runs. And as I said, up to 0.23, Mesos, you know, didn't really help you a lot there. And what happened now is we have introduced two new primitives that effectively help you as a framework developer or the framework itself to, you know, do things there. And these are essentially the two things that are called dynamic reservations and persistent volumes. And with the dynamic reservations, in contrast to the static reservations, where you would upfront, so when you launch your slave, you would essentially say, I want to reserve these and these resources for whatever application or framework. So you'd say two CPUs always for Marathon. But that sucks, right? Because you need to restart the slave. You need to, you know, need to know ahead of time what you want to do. And dynamic reservations essentially allow you to do that. They, you know, you can just per framework on during operation, you can just say, okay, I now want to reserve that part of the resources for this and this application or this and this framework. And the other part is, as I said, the persistent volumes. Remember back the discussion we had around the sandbox? So that goes away, right? If you Even if you manage, or if Mesos manages to launch the same like MySQL process on the same host, that previously created sandbox is gone. It's still physically there, but it will create a new one. It will not offer you the same volume, the same sandbox again. And persistent volumes essentially solve that problem. So you can essentially, from a framework perspective, say, hey, if I get killed and I'm on the same machine, I want to have my sandbox back. Doesn't solve the distribution problem yet, but at least these problems are solved. You don't need to do it with static reservations anymore.
Hmm. Any of the reading I've done in distributed computing and distributed computing theory always seems to come back to that problem with data consistency. If things blow up, now what? How do we solve that problem?
There are a couple of good solutions. So, I mean, obviously you can, you can use a distributed file system, HDFS or Kubernetes or Ceph or whatever. You can NFS mount something there. You can there are a couple of solutions also, like purely in the Docker space. The Flocker guys, for example, do something there. EMC has awesome work there. So there are a couple of solutions that exactly address that. We typically, we don't invent these things ourselves. We are partnering with others to bring that solution into the DCOS.
So one more kind of final fundamental question here related to installing Mesos in your environment. Now, it's going to be an existing operating system that's there. You mentioned CentOS, Ubuntu are pretty common choices. When you install Mesos, how does he gain the permissions he needs to do things like execute tasks that's giving him access to resources and so on?
Right. Next question. So it's running under root. So yeah, I'm probably not that proud of that part, but it's running under root.
Oh, really? Okay. Because I said it's when I was thinking of that question, I went, oh boy, it sounds like he really would be happy with root permissions. but of course, he couldn't be doing that because, gosh, we stopped doing that a decade ago. Okay.
I think they're working on something. I'm not entirely sure. I would need to look in the code again. It probably gives it up as soon as it has started the task. But yes, for certain things, you do need that.
You know, there's some parallels with other technology too. Like, in the vSphere world, a lot of people just set full admin and let it rip, and some applications require full admin. When we say it out loud, probably not what we want in an ideal world, but the cold reality is this is not a unique situation where this is occurring.
Right.
Wow, Ethan, the flexibility is probably the most interesting thing about Mesos so far. You take Apache Mesos, I'm glad we learned how to say that word properly, and you add a framework on top of it, almost like we're building this platform from the base level up. That's the general formula, but you can really deviate to meet your needs based on, in my mind, either the in-house skill sets that you have, so you may have to deviate based on who knows what particular language or infrastructure or framework, but also the workload requirements. So I really like how flexible the system is, while at the same time having a good kind of starting runway to get you off, I guess, off into the airplane of the Mesosphere. What do you think?
My big takeaway from here was actually more fundamental than that even, which is Mesos by itself doesn't do a lot. It's the kernel Michael kept describing, comparing it to the Linux kernel in a sense. With Mesos, you've got this thing that gives you some capabilities, but by itself doesn't do much. You need that framework. He mentioned Kubernetes came up, and Marathon, I think, was another one that he said several times.
Because there was a lot, yeah.
Yeah, he said you pick a framework that runs with Mesos that lets you do what you need to do. You're going to choose a framework that matches your data center application requirements. And it's kind of like, okay, Mesos is just one part of the picture. Beyond that, you add this framework that then lets you schedule and leverage those resources. Well, let's move away from the theory and maybe into some of the practical aspects of running Mesos if you introduce it to your data center. I mean, to my way of thinking, it would really change the workflows maybe, or maybe change some of the thought processes that go around into deploying an application. So let's start right there, Mike. What's it like to deploy an application using Mesos?
Again, no one uses Mesos alone. You always use a framework. So if I rephrase that, for example, if you're using Marathon or Kubernetes or whatever for this application level stuff, so you would essentially at some point in time, decide, do you have, I'm going to call it legacy, an existing application, or are you going all in with the Docker hype and containerize your stuff? And depending on that, you obviously want to have a full CI/CD pipeline. And we have frameworks like Jenkins, which you can actually run directly on the D2S that help you there. But essentially, you somehow need to get your Docker images or whatever you have there, JVM, jar files or whatever, somehow into Mesos. And the main point then is really, well, twofold. On the one hand, Mesos and Marathon and the other frameworks essentially takes care of all the crazy that can happen, if a server goes down or a service goes down or whatever. But you also want to monitor Mesos itself, right? And you just want to, collect basic health, and you want to make sure that Mesos, although Mesos Master is highly available. There are like typically three or five of them. There's failover implemented. There is a Zookeeper cluster that sits next to it that coordinates everything, the overall state and so on. So all of that is great, but you still want to monitor Mesos as well.
Now, again, you mentioned getting the right jar, getting the right whatever it is that is going to run here. So if I'm just a typical enterprise and I'm trying to run, I don't know, a mail server, can I make that work in Mesos, or do I really have to customize some special sort of process?
No, absolutely. You can directly whatever as long as it is a Linux application, right? As long as it runs on the Linux.
So Microsoft Exchange, Ethan. Stop that.
Right.
I'm pretty sure you can do some fancy stuff with Docker there too. No, not really. I don't know. Yeah, let's go there. Essentially, as long as it's a Linux application, it runs on your local Linux operating system. It runs on the Mesos. And then the question is really just, what are you using? For example, Marathon offers a REST API, HTTP API, better say, where you just submit it, right? You have what we call an application specification, which is just a fancy word for saying, here's the configuration of my application. I use this Docker image here and so many CPU shares and that amount of RAM, maybe some constraints. That's in JSON formatted. You submit that to a HTTP endpoint, and then Marathon takes it from there, right? Takes this application specification and uses Mesos to launch your application. Or you have Kubernetes. In Kubernetes, there's a different, worldview. There are pods and services and proxies and so on. So it depends then on the framework you use.
So the big difference here, if we're used to running an application on a specific host, that's, typically, okay, this is server Bob, and Bob's the mail server. That's what he does. Now we're going to hand this application over to the framework, and the framework's going to make a call into the Mesos environment and stand up that application, consuming whatever resources are needed.
This is really the purest form of kettle, right? You don't really, you can look at it, right? You can go drill into the Mesos logs and see, this application ran on the host 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But who cares? It's kettle, right? If that host goes away, well, another host will come. Yeah, you don't care. You don't care where it runs. You just care that it runs.
Okay, so let's say my application running on Mesos is underperforming. Things aren't going well. How do I troubleshoot that problem? Because it could be in any number of cattle.
Huh. Right. Absolutely. So there are three levels in terms of monitoring and logging you really want to look into. So that's on the one hand, if you look at each of the individual machines, the overall host level, like how is the host operating system doing, space, CPU utilization, whatever. Then there is the level of monitoring and logging, and I just lumped that up together now. For simplicity, within a certain task, and that could be, for example, a Docker container running as the unit of execution. And then there is everything that is going on in the scheduler, essentially. So both Mesos Master and the framework scheduler. And for each of them, you have different requirements in terms of what you want to see, what you want to keep around, what are indicators for things are going well or not so well. And then it really depends. If you have something stateless, simple, not distributed, like Nginx, right? Just one standalone application, you might have thousands copies of that, but they don't talk to each other. They just simply run and do serve their stuff. That's a different thing than debugging, let's say, Cassandra, right? Which is in itself a pretty decent, distributed system, which can have a lot of failure modes and a lot of things that can go wrong. And Mesos essentially, it gives you the primitives. You can look at the logs and see how it is doing, but it doesn't really help you or give you much more than that, right? You need to be a Cassandra expert to debug Cassandra or to tune it or whatever, right? In a sense.
Yeah. Okay. It's just a different way of thinking about it. Now, are there folks that specialize in tools that help you find out what there's a, you know, an execution problem on a specific member of the Mesos environment?
Yeah. Yeah. So we per default are using Datadog and, you know, also promote that. I mean, obviously if you have something else and want to use something else, you're welcome. But we are using Datadog, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with Datadog, but a pretty nice way of doing things. Offering, as I said, on different levels, container, actually task level, host level, and so on and so forth. So you can pretty much see anything and everything that you need to see. Other than that, yeah, I mean, also PagerDuty, but again, that's us. You can always use something else. And there are a number of really cool things. I don't know if you've heard about Prometheus. SoundCloud did that. And we've actually one or two of the developers who did that hired. They joined us. And there are low-level things like CAdvisor from Google, essentially for a single container. So you need to aggregate that somehow. Typically, you're doing that through Prometheus. Yeah, so there are plenty of... Essentially, it's your existing logging monitoring infrastructure that you then somehow hook into Mesos. There's little that is kind of like specific to Mesos, or you can only use with Mesos, really.
That's sinking in. Like, the more you talk about it, the more it seems like it's really pick your poison. You're not forced into any one direction based on the framework, based on the underlying Apache Mesos itself, how to monitor it. And it almost feels like the troubleshooting that you're going to do with applications remains kind of the same, because Mesos is just kind of picking a place to run the same code you would run yourself statically.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better. Yes.
So, Michael, if someone is listening to this show and they want to find out more about Mesos or maybe Mesosphere and give it a test drive, give them some URLs, give them some resources. Where do they go?
Right. So you want to start at the Apache side. So that's mesos.apache.org. There, as I said, you can install from source. You can look at the documentation. You can try out stuff. If you want to come over to our site, mesosphere.com, like the, you know, the mesosphere, this layer in the Earth atmosphere, mesosphere.com, and you will also find a product link and
which again, Mesosphere being a commercial offering.
So yeah, Mesosphere is the commercial entity, is the company behind Mesos. So we have a bunch of committers, so people who can commit code to Apache Mesos. We are offering products around that, training, service, and so on and so forth. And the main product, if you wish, is the data center operating system, the DCOS, and the community edition is what we essentially launch in the cloud, various cloud providers. So you can launch it in AWS, and all you need is, and all you're paying for is RDD, you know, EC2 instances, not nothing to us. So we make that available without any limitations for free.
And then I know you said it at the top of the show, but would you remind folks how they can follow you or where you might blog, anything like that?
Right. I'm not expecting anyone to, you know, get my name right in the first place. So that's why I say, just look it up somewhere. Maybe in the show has my name. mhausenblas on Twitter, mhausenblas.info, the website, and pretty much on each, and besides Google+, I believe everywhere else, I'm mhausenblas.
Well, hey, everyone. Thanks for listening today. And that is it for today's Datanauts podcast. You can reach me at EC Banks on Twitter, and my blog is ethancbanks.com. You can reach Chris Wall at Chris Wall on Twitter, and his blog is wallnetwork.com. And for more excellent Datanauts content, head on over to packetpushers.net. Partake on the bountiful feast of podcast goodness that you can find there, all free for you. Until then, may your server lights blink, your storage spindles spin, and your cables be cleanly managed. Okay, handing the mic over to Mr. Wall.
Now I'm blanking, standing for... Let me check.
Quick, to the Googles.
Yay! Thank you.